Welcome to Chai with Samdosa. I'm your host, all the way from Birmingham, UK. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are. I wish you all the best in this present condition. While we are sitting in tier 5, I'm still laughing because it's one of those things you can't sit there and be sad about it. Just enjoy it. Life is full of surprises. So there you go. And my podcast, Chai with Samdosa, has been in inception since 2020 June, and I have a privilege of talking to so many great individuals sharing their journeys with me in a conversation, which is called Heart-Centered Conversation. Sometimes we dive into something completely off the topics, and mine podcast is more about a flow of communication with my guests. So there is nothing scripted. What we are saying, which is coming from our heart. And that's the beauty of my podcast. You can find it on iTunes, Spotify, and other major platforms where you can download this iPod or iPodcast from different platforms. So let me introduce today's guest. And today's guest is all the way from United States of America. And she's not from Washington, D.C., but one of the cities is called Washington. And that's what I actually completely asked her. She will more dive into that. Her name is Diane Wisga. And what I can tell you is she has, 30 years. She's stuck in a courtroom and then boardrooms and universities and distill complex ideas into easily understood metaphor and directly emotional language using word with power, passion, and precision. So that's just a snippet what I'm just going to share with you, but I would like her to completely dive into it and say about what are the metaphors. We are using so many metaphors in our life, and I think it's going to be a great adventure to go along with her on this podcast with me. So, well, let's welcome my guest, Diane. Welcome, Diane, to my podcast, Chai with Samdosa.
Thank you, Sam. I'm delighted to be here, and I appreciate the invitation. Thank you.
It is a pleasure. Pleasure is all mine. So, tell my audience who Diane is and what's her purpose in this world.
I was reading a wonderful book the other day. It's called The Magic Strings of Frankie Presto. And it's a novel written by the author of The Seven People That You'll Meet in Heaven and other books. And in there is a quote by Dizzy Gillespie. If your listeners don't know, he was a very famous African-American trumpeter, jazz trumpeter, left a huge impression on the jazz world, was quite a prodigy, started playing piano when he was 4 years old. But what he said was, I've taken all my life to learn what not to play. And when I read that, it struck me because you think that these musicians know what it is that they're supposed to play, how they're supposed to play, for whom they're supposed to play. And I think that their journey, at least with Dizzy Gillespie, shows us that they are doing the same thing we are, which is figuring out what story we're supposed to tell, what story we're not supposed to tell. And so for me, I'm at the point in my life that I call Middle Earth Age, if the hobbits don't mind that, where I find I'm asking life, what do you want for me? So you know, we all grow up and we go to school and we go to university and we go up to military, and it's all about what's next. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to marry this person. I'm going to live in this place. I'm going to have this size house, whatever. And you get to the point, if you're lucky, where you turn around and instead of telling life what it is that you want to do and how you want to do it, you ask life, what do you want from me? How do you want me to be of use in the world? I don't know how much time I have left, but that's the question that's driving me right now. What does my life want from me? And recognizing that I think I'm on the right path, if Dizzy Gillespie has has anything to say about that.
Wow. Wow. What a start of the podcast. I will add over here because I think the story which has been given to my father's father was received by his father, what the same story he's using, and his father has given it to my father, and my father is using the same story, and my father has given it to us using the same story, and what we have used and how we have to understand that those stories were said for that period of time. We all have this journey to start and begin something amazing in our life. We have to change the story, and that's the best part. You need somebody or you need the guidance to help you to change the story. Otherwise, you will be stuck in the same story for the rest of your life. You are saying the same story to other people and you're connected with people that says, oh, I got the same story. So that's why we are connecting together. But sometimes you have to think about it. Is everything is repeating the same thing? Or we need something good about our own journey. That's the journey you begin. And you started to think, wow, that's something different. Otherwise, I was in the same cycle.
Yes. And there has been an enormous awareness about that of late, I think, not just here in the States, but all over the world, recognizing that the narrative, or as you say, the story that was handed down from father to son, from mother to daughter, shaped, informed, gave us permission or held back permission from what it was we were allowed to become or do or say. And when you look back on how it was that that story came to you, there is value in knowing the story of the ancestors. And so when I look back at my people who mostly came from Poland and escaped during World War II, and some of them came here as Jews but couldn't practice and so became Catholics, you look at that and realize that informs who you are. And at the same time, if you're lucky, or if you're aware, or if you're awake, can take that and say, that belongs to them. Now, what's my narrative going to be? And I find this especially true now where in the prison system. So I have a friend in San Juan Capistrano, California, who's been doing a lot of story work in the prison system. And there you find the narrative is these people are prisoners because, or in the Native American world, as the Native, when the white settlers came through in the US, these First Nations people are this way because, and everybody's lumped together in this great big collective. Now it becomes pulling out those individual stories and giving people permission. So the tagline that's been in my email signature, oh golly, I would say for 15 years or more now, is there is no greater burden than carrying an untold story. And that line was written by Zora Neale Hurston, who was an author, a writer in the 1930s and later. She was African American, and she told the stories in the African American, I would say, dialect. And this particular line comes out of her novel called Their Eyes Were Watching God. And if I could tattoo that somewhere, I would, because I think that's the place we are now. People are carrying the burden of their untold story and are looking for the place to say, this is who I am. This is where I came from. This is what I believe. This is why I was sent to Earth, if you believe that, you know, with my cosmic contract, which I do, for this particular purpose. And in conjunction with that, I will say that narrative, the story world that you were talking about, that's opened up, it is taking back authentic storytelling. And I say that because there was a time, and there still is, when the entire corporate world said, this is a story, that's a story. That was an anecdote, that was a joke, it wasn't a story. And so now there's this pullback. How are we going to be engaged in story? That to me, so I that to me is the real question. How do we become engaged in the story as the teller, as the listener, and then together, you and I, we create this third entity, the story.
Absolutely. I think, you know, when people talk about story and people are very eager to listen to that story, and when we start, and especially the children, when we talk to them about the stories, and they are very connected, they want to be part of this all in understanding that where you come from and why we are here and what we are going to be doing going forward in our life. Sometimes we don't have answers to it, but within the story, we help them to understand that we are all here on a journey, and one day we have to return back. But how are you going to create your karmic account here, which will help you achieving that upliftment to the next world? That's where we all trying to understand ourselves and trying to teach others as well.
What are the questions that you find are being asked by, say, the young people about that, about how do we learn what our real story is? How do we figure out what story will help us achieve our karmic destiny?
That's quite a deeper question. Children, youth, at the moment, they are not interested in those sort of things because they think they are going to live forever. They're going to live forever because I think they are still on the journey of understanding this present situation, what they are going through right now, because they're getting so much bombardment from right, left, and center. They're just thinking, you know, if I can pass one day, that's enough for me. I haven't got a clue what future life for me. And what is my real purpose over here? Because everybody has to go through. I'm working since when I'm 12 years old. Yeah, I have my own journey. I've gone through with some hardship in my childhood. Then I become mature to be a teenager, then into going to youth. In sort of journey took me so far that when I came to the UK in 1996, that was another journey started, because I was in a completely different world. Coming from the third world to the first world was like a very big transition for me. And it allowed me to learn a lot of things during that space of time. And I was humble and was lucky that I was surrounded by right people. I do have wrong people around me as well, which has actually taught me so many things. And that was part of my journey to receive those people and acknowledge them and appreciate them. But when you're going through with a very high turmoil in your life, you feel that nobody is holding your hand. No, you don't see that there is a presence of a spiritual person with you, which you can't see at that time because you are so clouded into your head. And now when I say to my daughters, my older daughter is 20 years old. She's in her second year in medical school. When I share stories with her, she listens very, very attentively. As my father has gone through with a very high to the low, to the high, to the low. And she appreciates whatever I do for her now, because she sees that there is always a light at the end of the tunnel.
You reminded me of something. I often hear the voices of my my mom and my dad who have passed on. In my head, some days I will go for a walk. My father, my mother died earlier than my dad, and he never remarried. He would go for walks. He loved walking. And even when his legs were pretty bad, his knees were pretty bad, he took out his trekking poles. He figured out still how to drive the car, how to get to the places that he loved to walk. And even now, when I'm walking, there are some places that I know he likes. There's one that has a bench and it overlooks a big farm. When the weather is good, you can see Mount Rainier in the distance, you know, behind Seattle. And I'll sit with him and I'll say, what do you think? You know, what do you think about the view? How do you like this? Is this a good place to pause for right now? And I also hear my mother's voice a lot. And I think that had I listened earlier in my life, which from your response reminds me that that's pretty much the job of children to not do, to not listen, to figure it out on their own until they get to, as you said, your daughter in her early 20s. Now it makes sense. I can hear my mom's voice in so many things. I'll repeat things that she told me. And I believe that had I been able to listen to some of that wisdom earlier than I did, you know, it might have made my life a little bit easier. But that's the conundrum, isn't it? We have to walk our own path. The path is made by walking. By walking, you make the path, as Antonio Machado says in his poem. And at the same time, I think there's a recognition that there are people with you. They want to help you. They want to support you. And yet maybe it is the price you pay of being a human to learn how to fall down, how to get up, how to fall down and how to get up. But I can say that some of the greatest gifts I have today are hearing mom's voice. And I can hear her say, Diane, Diane, or walking with my dad, which I didn't get too many chances to do because he lived in New Jersey. I'm out here on the Pacific Northwest or on the left coast. So I don't know if there is a so they am.
you know, we all had a very good people in my journey. When you talk about, you know, those presence, you know, when we feel those presence in ourselves, but we are very gullible, or we are very not ready. Sometimes time takes the precedent over a lot of other things as well. And we are, sometimes information or sometimes things happen to that certain time, which has been decided by the universal light. And it's going to happen at that exact time. You try to force it to happen at that particular time, it's not going to happen. And I'm so humble. And in terms of my journey of, I got married in 1996 and we were together till 17 years. And then we departed from there. And thus 7 years in 2013 onwards to 2020, my life was very unsettled because I literally lost my children because she took my children away from me. And, you know, when you brought your children up by yourself, and you see their each and every inch of happiness or sadness and everything, that gives you an understanding that, you know, what you have done as a father for your daughters is outstanding, but you can't seem to find that. And I was so humbled when on my 50th birthday, when they were sharing some messages of reminding me, Dad, remember we used to go to the park and we used to go and climb the trees and we never saw any other parents used to do those sort of things, asking their daughters to climb the trees. And we used to go into the rain and we used to jump in the puddles, and we never see other parents bring their children in the rain. And I used to tell them, you know, rain is a blessing. We should be receiving rain. Otherwise, without rain, you can imagine what's going to happen. So whenever it's raining outside, you just say, thank God it's raining. So, you know, I was so going through with my own journey, up and down, up and down. And I realized that, you know, life is full of adventures instead of challenges. The quicker you accept the adventure, you will have so much fun instead of heartache and hardship and everything else. And now I will say the blessing of COVID-19 has been so much on us. And I'm counting every day as a day of gratitude. And that's it, you know, nothing else, I would say. I'm meeting amazing people like you, and I've met so many other amazing people on my podcast, sharing their knowledge, sharing their spirit with me, spending that quality time with me, and giving me the opportunity to hear you while you are so far from me. But now we are connected on this Zoom call, but we are so connected because our vibrations are intertwining to each other and hearing each other and listening to each other.
We are simpatico in that. I follow in the tradition of Thich Nhat Hanh, the Vietnamese Buddhist monk who celebrated his 94th continuation day in October. And one of his teachings is that when we accept suffering, we will suffer less, which sounds, you know, paradoxical, but I think he's saying what you're suggesting, that if we take it and reframe it as something, instead of what is this thing that's being done to me? How come me? Why is God singling me out to feel this pain or this hurt? If we could, for the moment, and they say that, you know, you can do for the moment, for a day, what might seem impossible for a lifetime. If for the moment we can say, this is a blessing that is coming in disguise, and I may not recognize what the gift is for a long time, but I have to take it on faith that that's what's being sent. And I can say, I spent a lot of years, my used to be husband had an affair, and it lasted for a year before I found out about it. And then everything still seemed to go well for him. His job went well, his this went well, his that went well. And I spent a lot of time drinking rat poison and hoping the rat would die. And then when he finally left, and I look back on this time, I realized that I would not have done the things that I did, but for that, as you call it, adventure in my life. People came into my life that gave me a hand up, opportunities presented themselves. I mean, there was a time when I could not rub two nickels together. And I worked at a farm stand. There was an organic farm not too far from my house. They had a sign up one day. They said, help wanted. And I drove in and I said, well, I want help. And they thought that was very funny. And so I worked in a farm stand. You know, here I am. I've got a law degree. I've got a nursing degree. And I couldn't see my way through anything. And yet those months when I worked with them were some of the happiest I can remember. I'm getting paid $7 an hour, which is nothing. And yet every day I get to talk to people who are interested in organic food. I get to talk with them about how to prepare the food or how to get a child, you know, to eat the food. And there would be, you know, the fire department would come by on a break and get something, or a teacher out of school, or a nursing home down the road. There was a fellow that got into one of those little motorized bikes, came down. And so maybe that is the gift of hindsight, that we can look back and understand how come we had this adventure. And with that understanding, look forward and say, all right, this is how I'm going to handle it now. It's the last thing I'll say about this is, it's like, this is borrowed from Pema Chodron, but she talks about suffering as being like sets of waves in the ocean. And before you get the teachings, before you are clear on how to practice, it's like the waves in the ocean. They come along and they knock you down and you're under the water and you can't breathe and you have sand in your nose and your mouth and in your bathing suit, and you finally stand up and another wave comes. And over time, as you practice, whether that's your meditation or your gratitude or all of it together, the waves still come. The waves do still come, but you can stand. They don't push you under anymore. They might knock you around a little bit, or maybe more than a little bit, but you know now how grounded you are. And I think that that just comes with age and with time. And maybe the blessing of having had a lot of adventures. I don't think I'll ever call them challenges again. I'm just going to say, I'm having a Sam adventure.
No, just because I think it's changed your perspective of looking at the life. Yeah, what you have gone through, I've gone through the same thing. My ex was cheated on me. And you know what? You did not do 2 + 2 = 4. You always think, no, it would be, oh yeah, she got a good friend and she's having good fun with her friends, and there was lies upon lies upon lies. And then, you know, as a father, as a man in the house with 3 children, looking after a lot of things going on, and you know what has happened, you know, I was very bitter in the beginning, what has happened to me. But then I realized, you know, not that bitterness. I was actually praying. For 7 years, I was praying. You know, sometimes you have you got a pain in your one finger. Let's, for example, you have cut in here on your toe, your thumb. I beg your pardon, thumb. And you have a pain in entire hand. You know, you feel, you know, I only have a spit of pain here, but I'm feeling the pain in my entire hand. That was affecting me. And I was praying that this is affecting my life. I'm praying, please, God, help me remove this pain from my system. And one day happened. And I was so blessed. Everybody was there looking at me and started saying sorry to me, saying, you know, I'm so happy that I'm out. I've got freedom now. And that was the way I looked at the life. My life has changed. My life has drastically changed. And she started to receive what, she started to look at it and she said, how did you manage 3 children alone? That was her question to me. It was easy. Because I sacrificed my career and everything for my children. That's why I managed to help my children. My children remembers me now, Daddy. We remember those times you spent with us, but mother did not remember any time spending with her children. So that was my adventure. That's why I said to a lot of people, you know, adventures happen, and I learned a lot of things during that adventure. There were so many deep adventures, which I never ever wanted to have, but I still went through with those adventures. And my present wife with me, we have different sort of adventures. And we look at it, you know, life is full of surprises as well. You wake up tomorrow morning, you might be thinking, oh, let's pack a bag and we go somewhere. Or let's do something. Let's do this. Let's do that. But it comes with maturity. And when you talk about when you go to that age, sometimes it does not require that age. you have to understand that maturity in your soul is there. A child who is 5 years old or 7 years old or 10 years old might be talking big things. Mm-hmm. And you look mm-hmm. at that person mm-hmm. and you say, mm-hmm. how could you talk about it? You're just 10 years old. But the soul in that person is must be very mature, which is almost 200, 300 years old. Sitting there, the last stage is to come out from this transient world, to go to the next world, to have that experience in this world of the 10-year girl or a boy, and come up with a dis-ease in that boy or a girl, which will be going through some journey, and that the girl or a boy is laughing out loud that, oh, yeah, it's okay. I know I got cancer. It's okay. I'm enjoying it. It's all right. That the maturity in them comes from that soul.
Oh, yes.
We are intertwined. We completely forget. Okay. I'm sitting here in Birmingham. You are sitting in America. You know, if you say, Sam, I really feeling under the weather, can you send me some healing? I say, yeah, sure, I'll send you the healing. And I will tell you instantly receive the healing and you feel, oh my God, I'm protected now. I'm feeling the healing now. I'm coming, the healing coming to me. If you are open to receiving it. People are saying, yeah, well, you're sending something, I'm not receiving it. But you're not open. Your heart is closed. Open your heart. Let it become the vessel to receive the love. Mm-hmm.
So often we might think of someone, we might think of them, and all of a sudden the phone rings, you get an email, a letter, they still come in the mail, a letter comes in the mail, and it could be considered circumstance or serendipity, coincidence, yeah. But I really believe that we draw these people in, maybe because we need to be connected to them, maybe because they need to be connected to us. And there is so much of that on so many levels, not just among humans, but they're finding out now that trees and forests are completely interconnected with each other, even though they're not all the same trees. You can have different trees in the forest, and yet they share this webbing, they share nutrients back and forth, they share alarm back and forth. It is this living entity, and we look at it as a tree. And yet they've measured trees with very delicate sensation instruments, equipment, and they can tell that a tree's bark trunk actually moves incrementally in and out as it's taking up water. It's breathing. You know, we look at it, we lay our hand against it, we might feel something. But I just am so charmed by that notion that, and it, because it's one thing to intellectually understand that. It's another thing to be present to it, like a forest bathing, which I believe the term started in Japan. We say it all the time now. You go out there and you stand in the forest and breathe in and out, and they're breathing in and out with the leaves, and we're exchanging the oxygen and the carbon dioxide. And that is so incrementally small of the whole universe. And one thing, a friend of mine, JJ Endrin, who's in London and a podcaster as well, said to me, and I think he was quoting a guru whose name I've completely forgotten, but he said this to me well over a year ago: there are no duplicates in nature.
Wow.
And so I go outside and here there's blades of grass and there's leaves, and I'm looking at this thing and saying, not a one of them is a duplicate. And when you start to consider that, well, of course, because they were born at a different time, the light, as you say, the rain, the heat, the cold, the whatever, to look out into the world and realize that there are no duplicates in nature. And if there are no duplicates in nature, there are no duplicates in us. One can say, yes, I get that. But until one is, as you say, open to receive that, it's going to be just a little intellectual exercise. So for me, walking, being outside, is part of that. Wow.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, when we start the journey, because I have a statement which I use most of the time is, we are born to win, conditioned to fail. Now,
like that.
So we are born to win. Indeed, we are born to win. So we are winner. The conceive of the sperm into the egg, and you came out and you were the winner. You won the lottery. Billions of sperm were trying to get into that sort of a journey. And you are the unique person who came to this world. But then we started to get conditioning. Since we are 5 year old or 7 year old onward, we started to get conditioned from school, from parents, from siblings, from uncle, from aunties, and all people started to condition us. And when we reached that situation, when we reached that age where we started saying, you know what, I haven't got a clue why I can't laugh out loud. I have to cover my mouth, or I have to be very slow in laughing. Or we can't actually express ourselves because we are conditioned. We are in the society also conditioned to a lot of things. And we become so conditioned that we completely forgot who we really are. What is our purpose? That's why we started going on the search of going in from one religion to another religion, going in from meditation to going on to a long journey in Tibet or in another places of India and all sorts of places to find out yourself, who you are. Not realizing that everything is within yourself, but that's also a journey. And that's a very slow journey to know yourself. And this is also a journey of discovery. And that's where we don't want to discover ourselves. We are reluctant to discover ourselves. What people say to you, oh, by the way, they can see in you your skills, or they will see in you your character. They can see in you your gift, but you can't see your gift yourself because you are completely shutting down on those things. And people say to you, you know, you are very good at this. And you will look at it and you will say, really? I never thought of that. Because we nobody has encouraged us. Nobody has told us. We are not there to discover those things as well. And we realize that this is not me. And somebody says to you, you look so beautiful. And you say, hey, no, nothing. Don't worry about it. It's all good. Because we do not appreciate ourselves. Self-love is not there. That's why we lost so much self-worth on that journey.
Sometimes I think that what we are afraid of is how bright we would shine, how possible setting things on fire it would be if we allowed ourselves. And I think there's an element of that we're afraid to see, to experience that radiance, if we were to see ourselves that way. I remember a storyteller, Elizabeth Ellis out of West Virginia. She's still around. She has a voice that sounds like chocolate tastes. And she used to tell a story about her mother getting angry with her for doing this bad thing or that bad thing. And she would say to Elizabeth, you know, you were made in the image and likeness of God. And even to a child, there's a disconnect. So if I was made in the image and likeness of God, aren't I being God now? Of course, it totally perplexed your mother. But that sense that we are, how does the saying go? We're spiritual beings having a human experience or a Sam adventure, as I'm going to call it from here on in. And these outfits that we wear are our disguises.
Our body is also a disguise. We actually, this body is just a vessel or a container. Our soul has been trapped inside. And that's what we can't conceive that. And we are running on the flashing lights around our in our society. That if Diane have a new car with her number plate on it, I should be buy a car or my with number plate on it. So there is sort of a come up as a competition. Even though I don't have money to afford it, but I have to stand next to her to show her that I can do the same thing. Even though my car is on higher purchase, it doesn't make a difference to me. Yeah, but because you are living in the society, and that's what I used to say to a lot of people. What other says to you does not make a difference. They are going to say to you those sort of things. What you say to yourself, that makes the biggest impact on you. Because we live for the society, not for ourselves. Yeah. We, first of all, when something happens in our house, we look at it, if my daughter is going to do something, what is the impact is going to have on the society? What society is going to tell me? See, no, you look at your daughter. Your daughter is your blood. Your daughter is your daughter. She's not somebody else's daughter. If your daughter is going to be succeeding in her education and everything, people will say, yeah, wow, what a great, great family. What a great person. But if your daughter failed in something, they started saying the same thing. But you need to stand for your daughter. You said that, don't worry about it, darling. Nobody matters what outsider says. What matters, what I understand who you are and how I'm going to hold down to you and how I'm going to support you going forward in life. Yeah. That's what matters to the children. And sometimes parents forget that, thinking about what the society is going to say. And that's why the children are completely biased about their parents and they run away from the house.
So we need parent education as well as children education. I was thinking about this the other day because I didn't get any children, but I'm the oldest of seven. And my mom was a only child and her parents were not the particularly best environment. And my father was the youngest of 12 or 13, not because his mother had that many, but because she brought in children who were orphaned when the flu epidemic of, I think, 1918, you know, circled through this country. Mm-hmm. So you have my father, whose experience was being taken care of by his older sisters, and he was doted on by his mother, who just, you know, loved him as the favorite. And my mom, you know, who came out of a completely different situation, and they get together, and you wonder, well, there's no such thing as parent school. There's no parent university to go to. There are more of these opportunities today than there have been. But when you think about it, they're figuring it out as they go along based on their own experience. And that awareness, because we can blame our parents for so much. You weren't there, you didn't do this, blah, blah, blah. But that awareness that they did the best they could with what they had enabled, oh, I don't like that word, no, gave the root and the nourishment and the nutrients to me to be to live my own life. And so if I look at it that way, coming from the situations that they did and the ways in which they raised seven children well, very well. My mom used to say, we're rich, we just don't have a lot of money. And we didn't. And yet we didn't go without. And it was the values, the stories, who you are, what you're going to do in the world. Don't be worrying about anybody else. You know, just like you said, you might have a couple of Sam adventures going on out there, but that's okay.
Absolutely.
That's okay.
Absolutely. Beautiful. Yeah. Dan, thank you very much for being so generous with your time and with your wisdom today in my podcast, Chai with Sam Dosa. Can you tell my audience how they can connect and what sort of product or services do you offer?
Well, thank you. That's generous. What I say I do is help people figure out the hazy ideas around their core story, their core message, and then transform those hazy ideas into powerful change-making stories. So that is the product of 30 years of story work in various disciplines, law, nursing, education, university. So that's where my focus is right now, is on helping you find out what your core story is. I believe that people do know what their story is. They just don't know how to say it. They don't know how to get it out. They don't know how to reach it. So that's what I do. And the links will be in the episode notes. So Quarter Moon Story Arts is my website and my podcast, which started, I think, a short 2 months before yours did, is on all the platforms. And that's called Stories from Women Who Walk.
Wow. Beautiful.
Yes. Thank you.
I will get all those sort of things in the description of my podcast, our podcast. And I wish you all the best and all the best for the today and the moment we spend together. And very attentively, I listened. And I was present in this moment of bliss, I would say. And it was a very amazing discussion, or which transpires me a lot. I learned so many things from you today. So thank you very much.
Thank you for opening your heart to me. I appreciate that. And I wish you all the best, you and your family, going forward. We'll see what happens in this brand new, never before tried year.
It's going to be amazing. Just keep open and just smile and be gratitude about being awake when you are awake. And just be thankful. You have to be thankful for whatever situation you are in, whether it's a good situation or a bad situation.
Especially the Sam adventures. Absolutely. Especially.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you very much. Have a fantastic day. Bye for now.
Thank you very much.
Bye.